Good afternoon, folks. This is Roger Gershman, and I'm here to have a talk with Rob Bartenstein. He is the CEO, Managing Director of Kestra, and really appreciate Rob taking the time to speak with you about Kestra, the Kestra Advantage. And so let's just get right to it with a, you know, immediate question.
Okay.
Look, what's happening in the world of advisors going independent is just unprecedented, right? I mean, we're seeing a mass migration from banks of traditional advisors moving independent. Can you explain what do you see are the issues that advisors has with banks today, and why are they now deciding to go in mass?
Yeah, thanks, Roger. So you're right. The momentum in the space has really accelerated. And I would point back to about 2018 for when things felt like they really started to heat up. We had been in operation at that point for 7 years, and the trend seemed to kind of catch up to us in terms of people wanting to go independent, wanting to explore independence. When we first started, we were very often having a conversation that sounded like, you want to go independent, right? And now the conversation has changed immensely to, we're here to talk to you because we want to go independent. So the directional aspect of things has really changed. The industry has really accelerated its understanding and its its input, if you will, into the independent space. So a lot of the folks that were ancillary partners and or in management in some of the larger firms in our business have also gone independent and set up businesses that support the independent space. And it's sort of just been a very virtuous cycle in that regard.
Look, years ago, an advisor would have to walk into a Schwab, a Fidelity, a Pershing, and buy and start his or her RIA a la carte. They'd have to pick up their, identify the custodian, the costs associated with it, their CRMs and their, legal and their compliance. And I mean, just everything a la carte. And I mean, it's a huge, huge task. So what we're seeing now is that firms like yourselves are making it really easy to go independent. I mean, literally within 6 months, all the systems work, the lights are on, the computers work, the fax machines work. I mean, everything is functional, and advisors just really just walk in the office just like as if they're walking into their office today or to another big bank, right?
Yeah, you really just described our business plan pretty much from day one. When we started, you got to remember, Scott and I were both longtime financial advisors before we got into management. And so what we really were doing was taking both sides of that coin and trying to merge them into a business concept that would make it easy for financial advisors who wanted to own the business, be the business owner, to get out and get going without having to do a lot of things that they never had any experience with, no matter how long they've been in the business. So very few people have sat through a real regulatory audit or built an office from scratch or installed technology and a variety of things like that. Those are all impediments that were keeping people from making a switch that's better for them and better for their clients. And so what we tried to do was really sew that solution together into a package that we call full service independence that really solves for all those issues and allows people, to use your phrase, to get out, get up and get going very quickly relative to what it was like for us to go out and start the RIA to begin with. And we did it just the way you described, which was a la carte everything. Nowadays, we've built kind of a turnkey solution that allows people to just tuck in and get running.
So you were part of Morgan Stanley. You left in 2011. What was your motivation to go independent? I mean, you were like, 2011 is like, feels like decades ago in the world of independence, right? So you're like, real, beginning, early stage. So not only why then, and really what's also changed since then. I mean, gosh.
When we first started, and we had gone through the financial crisis, and we had seen from the management side of the fence, we had seen the firms that we grew up in evolve and change, and really not, in our opinion, not for the better. And it really led us to believe that the business was no longer going to answer the call that we had been raised to sort of put at the center of the universe, which is that the advisor-client relationship is why those firms exist, right? And if that's not important any longer, and it's much more of a spreadsheet-driven operation where it's trying to find bigger share of wallet, trying to cross-sell, trying to drive initiatives that are valuable to share value, all those sorts of things start to get in the way of the advisor-client relationship. And we thought, you know what? We don't have to be huge to build a great business that does great things for advisors and clients. And we can customize this experience from the ground up, take the best of what we thought we knew, and we didn't know as much as we thought we did, to be quite honest with you, and then mold that into a platform that serves advisors first. So we take care of the advisor, they're our client. The advisor takes care of their clients, and everybody wins. But that's really what's changed is the cohesiveness, the breadth of the business that supports independent advisors today is just vastly different than it was in 2011. And it benefits advisors and clients across the board.
Yeah. And so, look, custodians have become really a commoditized business, whether or not you custody Morgan or Merrill or, big banks or Schwab or Fidelity or Pershing. I mean, they're all offering essentially the same products and services, SMAs, money markets, alternative investments, structured notes, I mean, everything. So you focus, your prime custodian is Fidelity. And so tell us a little bit about Fidelity and that advantage.
Sure. Well, let's start with the fact that whether we like it or not, to your point, the entire business is commoditized. So there's very little that separates any one firm from another on a platform or product basis any longer, I would argue. Now, there are differences, of course, but they become smaller and smaller as time goes by, and pricing tends to kind of converge and everything. So the whole business is commoditized. And so the way that you differentiate yourself in a commoditized environment is through service in large part. So we rely on Fidelity for their service. We're lucky, we're fortunate to be with one of the largest firms in the world, with all the same bells and whistles that our folks coming out of the likes of Merrill and Morgan, et cetera, are used to. One in three people, I think, already has an account at Fidelity just through a retirement plan, et cetera. So the name is great. We do maintain some smaller custodial arrangements that are more, one-offs or specific niche service issues for advisors and clients. But in the main, our assets are on the Fidelity platform. They're a great partner. They have a lot of horsepower. They have acquired eMoney, of course, which is a fantastic financial planning suite that we have an integration with, as well as MoneyGuide Pro. And they're investing and reinvesting in that business continuously. So they have been a fantastic partner for us. They provide us the sort of the name recognition, the stability, the absence of negative, press in the past, and all the things that people who are attracted to our model would value in terms of reputation, size, and breadth.
Look, independence and supported independence is a booming business, right? And a very competitive market. Sure. Kestra is the top of the chain. Tell us, what is the Kestra advantage?
For private wealth services, I think what we are constantly reinforcing with people that are examining us as an option, and there, to your point, there are many options in this field. Number one, we don't have a desire to grow headcount in a way that would be in any way recognizable from any of the places where we all grew up in the business. We kind of joke that we're in the yacht business. We're in the yacht building business. We're going to build about 10 or 12 yachts a year. And we're not going to suddenly change into building Honda Accords or any kind of mass produced anything. So for us, it's a very high end, white glove, high touch boutique environment. That's who we strive to be. And we are sort of self-limiting in that regard, in that there's only so many people we can serve until we grow the sales team and the service teams to support those folks. So our growth has to be very intentional. It has to be very deliberate. It has to be with the sort of people who want to do business the way we want to do business, and vice versa. And so the cultural fit is extremely important to us. And we're fortunate to have grown into a situation where we are doing due diligence on advisors just as they are doing due diligence on us. And we both have the right to say, hey, we love you, but we don't think it's a great fit for whatever reason. And that's okay. What distinguishes us in the finer points is probably, I think we're one of the few, if the only firm out there that will really do real estate for advisors from soup to nuts, all in, all the way across the board and into perpetuity. So we will help the advisor find the space that they want. Our project management team will build it to suit their specific designs in terms of tastes and style and all that kind of stuff. And then we will manage that facility for them into perpetuity, including paying the rent and all those other things that we do. So we have a team of folks who specialize in doing that. And I think that's different than most other firms who may be with you in the beginning or maybe with you for the first year or things of that nature, but then drop away and then you're responsible. So we keep that with us the whole way through. The same applies to technology. The same applies to compliance and other elements of infrastructure. We're there for the duration. So our relationship with an advisor is probably, I would say, 6 to 18 months on the front end. And then after they've joined, it's for the lifetime of their time with us. And fortunately, very few to zero people end up leaving. So we don't have a lot of experience in that side of the deal either. So it's worked out really well.
Being an early pioneer, also don't underestimate how early you've been to this market, but also the size and power and breadth of the organization. I'll say it, it's $100 billion and 1,700 advisors with five divisions. So that power and economy of scale offers you, in my opinion, objectively, a competitive advantage. That also goes to transition support. Like, again, a very competitive market, Schwab, Fidelity, Pershing, and all the competitors out there, you know, are dying for, you know, the dollar, right? The advisor's practice, which is incredibly profitable on average, you know, roughly, as you well know, around 70% plus minus, 1099 income. So the transition support and capital, in our experience, is a competitive advantage. If you can speak to that, that'd be great.
Sure. So I don't have specifics that are too deep on what our competitors do, but I do know what we do. And we begin with it's very sort of crude principle of gang tackling transitions. So we have a team of folks who are specifically trained for this. They go into the field. They're with the advisor in their new office for weeks, getting accounts moved and open. Then we have a similar team of folks here in Austin, where I am today, who support the team that's in the field in the back office doing that as well. So we used to do transitions on more or less a very fixed period of time with some very sort of strict parameters. We've evolved. We've evolved our thoughts, our thinking on that, and we've changed our standard. Our standard today is the experience that we're giving advisors when they go through our transition a referable experience? In other words, would they send their friends through that process? And if the answer to that is ever no, then we failed. So I think we've moved to a really strong, subjective-driven sort of analysis of how we're doing there, and that informs the level of support and attention that we give to that process. The economics of it, I think that, you know, to your point, I think we were relatively competitive, if not extremely competitive, on the transition support. Each deal is different and each deal is rated based on the nature of the business, of course. So the things that tip the scales, you know, in the advisor's favor to a larger size deal are obviously the ratio of advisory business is a big driver versus brokerage. Although we do have some folks who specialize in fixed income and do almost nothing but that. So we're not adverse to that in any way whatsoever. But that's a big one. The cultural fit is extremely important. The size of the business is a driver of how, you know, how high we'll go. So the bigger the business, the higher we'll go typically, and things of that nature. And I'm told and I'm confident that in terms of what the actual dollars are, percentages of trailing 12, that we're at or near the top of the range as far as the industry goes. And we're comfortable with that because it means that we're competitive with the right people.
A lot of firms are very stringent. my experience with you guys are very flexible and creative, should I say, as well.
Yeah, I think that that's an important point, but it always, to me, in my mind, and there are probably a lot of reasons for it, but it always comes back to the fact that we're advisors first, and we know what it means to be in that seat. We know what it means to be looking over that chasm and the fears. And frankly, look, we understand that advisors are putting their financial lives in our hands. All of those things are very important to us. We have an immense amount of respect and love for financial advisors. I don't think all firms can say that, but that's really who we are at our core, and that's what we're about.
So as far as compensation is concerned as well, equity is a major growing topic within independent firms. I mean, there's venture money out there. I mean, there's huge, huge amounts of capital. Right. Kestra is also a pioneer in this space with Blue Spring being a firm that is dedicated in the M&A of RIAs. And so talk to us about that, you know, division and the advantages of Kestra.
Yeah, it's important when you think about leaving a large firm, a W-2 environment, you're moving from a cash flow world to an equity world. Your business is going to be focused on revenue and EBITDA growth versus assets and various other things. That's all good news for advisors, as far as I can tell. We spend a lot of time talking about growing the equity value of your business. And what has really changed in the last 5 or 6 years in particular is we have people leaving firms now in twos and threes and fours who aren't just saying, we want to get out. We want to set up our own office and we want to be independent. They're saying, we want to get out. We want to set up our own office. And then we want to build a regional firm. And that is a big evolution. So we've got people who really are beginning to understand the value of capital and the value of putting that capital to use to grow EBITDA over time and create very large businesses that are saleable. Our colleagues at Blue Spring, which is, as you mentioned, one of the businesses in the holdings ecosystem, they specialize in that. That's what they do. So we are privy to a lot of current intelligence in terms of, what is driving transactions, pricing, EBITDA multiples, and things of that nature, which informs what we do with our advisors to help them constantly refine their businesses. Let's say within a 10-year lifespan, we have three phases of curriculum that we focus on with advisors that's strictly dedicated to helping them drive EBITDA value, EBITDA growth, and valuation on the back end, if that's what they ultimately choose to do in terms of selling the business. So we view ourselves as partners in that. That is definitely the long-term delayed gratification game that we're all in. But when you talk about multiples from 6, 7, 8, 9 times EBITDA, these become incredibly important transactions for anybody. Probably the largest transactions, most advisors will ever be involved in.
Yeah, and we're also really early. I mean, fast forward five years from now, it's just unimaginable the amount of M&A activity with disparate, independent RIAs. It's just
100% true. If you think about the demographics of our business, we're from an age standpoint, we're basically an inverted pyramid. So we've got a lot of people at the top of the pyramid who are ready to find an exit. Very few people at the bottom of the pyramid entering the business. Businesses that are solid in terms of compliance track record, solid in terms of advisory oriented, planning oriented, predictable revenue streams in that regard. Those valuations, I really have no reason to believe those valuations don't continue to go up because they're going to become more and more precious as time goes by.
So firms have been going upstream as far as the quality recruits. More and more, producers are entering the field, as we talked about, but also really sizable teams, right? 500 million, a billion, 2 billion, 3 billion, even $5 billion teams all across the street, Merrill Lynch, PBIG, and PWM teams. So talk to us a little bit about your ultra high net worth sort of angle and strategy.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is informed by my own background. So I started my career after law school. I was at DLJ and then Credit Suisse First Boston. Spent a lot of time working with family offices and taking companies through IPOs and things of that nature. So we kind of came into this with a vision for what we wanted on that front. And look, it's an ongoing execution project there. So you can spend a decade building bells and whistles onto a platform and still not you know, be entirely where you want it to be. I think what's changed so much, to your point, is, you know, I could, in the old days, I could go a year and not talk to any firm or prospective firm with $1 billion in AUM. And that's getting to the point where it's a weekly, monthly kind of conversation at this stage. So the sophistication and complexity of firms that are exiting the wirehouse space, is to your point, has gone through the roof. And it's our job to continue to match the you know, the expectations that they have in terms of being able to serve those clients that produce those sorts of books of business. So we have we've gone really kind of deep in terms of lending. We've got multiple lending partners that we put in competition to for the benefit of our advisors. Continually, we've expanded our alternatives platform. We've developed investment banking relationships for referral. You know, the list goes on and on, and we continue to try to bring in all, you know, the latest one is a stock loan program. So for, you know, for concentrated positions, advisors who have clients that have stock that they're willing to loan and get paid on, we're able to do that now. So we're really pushing the envelope every day with our partners in our advisory and wealth management business here to try to find, you know, the continuing evolution of what it means to be a high net worth platform for people like that.
Looking to the future, what is the goal for Kestra short term? Next, you know, your goal to acquire X amount of practices next year. Let's also talk the next 5 years. Let's talk about the next 10 years. What is the firm looking to achieve?
The ramp on recruiting has almost surprised us on some level. You know, it's a good problem to have, but it doesn't show any signs, at least yet, of abating. So I wouldn't have made predictions or even talked about things like this at this level a few years ago. But I think now, when we're recruiting across Kestra, roughly 60 million or so a year, looking into 100 million a year at some point in the not too distant future isn't crazy. So we're thinking about that. That
production.
Correct. That of course requires, you know, continually refining and growing the infrastructure to support that business. You can't go out and bring people in and then, you know, not have a service offering to backstop it. That wouldn't work. So it's a very complicated balancing act to do that in a deliberate way, as we talked about before. But what I think all of my partners and I agree on is that we do not have really a 2-year view of things. We have more of a 5 and a 10 year view of things. And so what we are trying to constantly do is build a business that's going to win long term. That means making prudent investments in meaningful things that matter to advisors and matter to clients. And I think, you know, going back to the very beginning of our conversation, if you keep the advisor client relationship at the center and you use that as your North Star, you're going to make, for the most part, you're going to make right decisions. You're going to make correct, directionally correct decisions. You're not going to be perfect. And Lord knows we've proved that time and time again, that we are not perfect. But with 12 years now under our belt doing this and continuing to sort of expand the growth rate and expand the platform and expand the business overall, we're beginning to feel like, you know, a 5 and a 10 year vision is actually something we can crystallize and then build towards. What I can tell you what it won't be. What it won't be is a mad dash to some number. You know, like that's the world that we all came from. None of us want to go back to that world. This is about, I'll say this kind of, I don't know how people will interpret this, but I feel fortunate to be able to say this. We have the luxury of being able to choose the way we want to do this now. And for us, it's about quality over quantity. It's about right fit and just building something that we can all look at ourselves and say we're proud of, that we've built this and that the folks that work with us and our partners are proud to be a part of. So that's sort of the subjective, you know, hard to put a number on it kind of feeling, but that's really what drives us these days.
It's a very, very impressive story. And thank you so much for taking your time out of your busy schedule to speak with us. And look forward to staying in touch. And of course, any advisor can reach out to you directly and us. And again, thank you so much, Rob, for the opportunity to speak with you.
Thanks, Roger. You're a great partner as well. We appreciate it. Good to be with you.